In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You're tuned in to the Gangster Chronicles with James McDonald, Reggie Wright Jr., and Alex Alonzo on the Digital Soapbox Network.
I have a material witness on an aggravated battery. With a handgun, and they believe this might be in retaliation to her testimony.
Welcome to another edition of the Gangster Chronicles, and this is episode 13, and my name is Alex Alonso. You may be aware of my platform, streetgangs.com, a.k.a. Street TV, where I interview OGs, former and current gang members, hip-hop artists, authors, and other influencers, and I'm here with...
Reggie Wright.
Big J.
And Big J, James McDonald. And this is episode 13. And if you're new to the podcast, please go back and start with episode number one, because most of our episodes are related to each other. And you won't start hearing me until episode 3. And if you're listening to this episode of the Gangster Chronicles on iTunes, please leave us a rating and a review so that we can continue bringing you this amazing content. You can rate us from 1 to 5, 5 stars if you love the show. And if you want to continue to hear it. And also, when you write a review, you can include questions, show ideas, and topics that you want to hear on future episodes. So I'm going to start this episode with some fact-checking from last week. And we actually have a special guest. But before we get to our special guest, let's go through these quick fact-checks from last week. Reggie, you mentioned a guy that was on death row for some murders related to the Chino Hills case. His name was Kevin Cooper. 1983 murder of 4 people, and now they're saying he might be innocent.
Well, the governor was trying to have a reinvestigation of the case.
So they're checking his DNA, I guess, right now. And according to Kevin Cooper, what do you think he says?
He didn't do it.
He didn't do it. Yeah. He says he was framed.
He escaped from Chino Hill prison.
Okay, and then the rapist that you were talking about again last week, Reggie, was a guy named Wayne Jerome Robertson, a.k.a. the Booty Bandit, up at Corcoran.
Dick Smiley from the, he's really a looter. So he probably even East Side, huh? He's so old, so he probably was East Side.
He was East Side when he went to the penitentiary.
When he went to the pen, yeah.
Okay, so he's an OG East Side
Pyro. Yeah, he's been in there since the 70s.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I found an article from 1998 that says that the guards were actually using him at Corcoran State Prison to rape and beat other inmates.
They were betting on him. They say use him, but they were betting. They were putting him in there like some gladiator shit going on.
Like that movie Animal.
Yeah. So apparently there was a huge investigation in the late 90s, early 2000s about this dude, Wayne. And I had never even heard that story before. That's crazy. All right, the next thing was you said, James, that Corcoran was opened in 87 last week. I said 89.
No, I went to Corcoran in 87.
Well, it says here that it was built on an old Native American reservation and opened in 88.
I rode in 88.
From Corcoran?
From Corcoran.
Okay. Well, maybe Wikipedia is sometimes incorrect. If he said he paroled in...
I paroled in 1988, Corcoran Penitentiary.
Okay. And today, as of today, O.J. Simpson hit 802,000 followers on his Twitter page.
Wow.
Okay, we thought he'd be up to a million by now, but it's dying off.
No, I think he's going to hit a million probably, I give it about a month, he'll be at a million. That's just 198,000 more people. And then we talked about Carl Douglas last week in that monumental car case. I said Pinto. We talked about it being a Pinto. It was actually a 79 Chevy Malibu, where the family of four children and two women were burned when the gas tank exploded back in 93.
$4 billion judgment.
$4.9 billion.
$5 billion, huh?
Yeah, for damages that went to the two women and four kids.
I'm sure they filed an appeal, and I'm sure they probably settled out on an appeal.
Yeah, what I didn't check is how much money the family ultimately got. But you know, Carl Douglas gets 40% of whatever that money is, or his firm.
Well, that and, you know, all those expenses that the attorneys like to, that's where they get you at, expenses.
All right, so that takes us to our special guest, man. This is a brother that I've known for many, many years. He's actually connected to one of the biggest drug trafficking cases in American history. He's from Compton, and I'm talking about my brother Chico Brown. We got Chico Brown in the studio today. Man, what's up, Chico?
Hey, what's going on, bro?
And I didn't really finish
the fact check
describing Chico. I met Chico when he was doing sort of what I would say community activist work and gang intervention and prevention work back in the early 2000s, but you're also CEO of Ag Entertainment.
Yes.
Let's start off talking about what that's all about.
Ag Entertainment is a production company. Did a few films, documentaries. I'm working on a few films now with Master P, Jamie Foxx, and some more people. Started off with Penny Marshall, who helped me start the company. And that was her way of giving back to me, to bring back to the neighborhood.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Penny Marshall was a good lady.
Now, a lot of people don't know who Penny Marshall is. For all the youngsters out there that Laverne have never heard of Penny Marshall, Laverne and Shirley, their family also produced, what's the other show that they produced? That came on before Laverne and Shirley.
Archie Bunker.
Nah.
Happy Days.
Happy Days. Happy Days used to come on at 8 o'clock on Tuesdays, and then at 8:30 was Laverne and Shirley.
Okay, I thought they was a spinoff from, but you're right.
What years are we talking about? Like late 70s?
No, Mark and Mindy was a spinoff from.
That's their show, too.
Yeah, Mark and Mindy.
Pretty much like half the shows that was on network television in them days was like Marshall Productions.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, I like what she loved basketball players, but I like that she really liked black people.
She was one of the most down-to-earth people, person I ever met in my life, for real. Like, she treated me like her son.
And unfortunately, she passed last year.
Yeah, this year.
This year?
Well, last year, December the 17th.
Yeah.
19th.
And I got a little emotional to see her. Cause it's like all the people that I grew up with, they're slowly dying on us.
How old was she?
Penny was, I think, Penny was 73.
80s?
No.
She was
still attending Laker games up for a while. Was it Laker or Clippers?
Yeah, but both.
Both.
She
was
an avid basketball
player. Okay.
Yeah.
But one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, Chico, is you actually was part of Freeway Ricky Ross's indictment back in, was it 96 or 95?
94.
Yeah. And although everyone talks about Freeway Ricky Ross as the one getting caught, you was his co-defendant in that case. Can you talk about how you met him, how you guys ended up hustling together, and how that whole case came smashing down on your life?
We've been knowing each other, but this particular time, we was opening a youth center over there in South Central, Crenshaw. So Rick had just came home, and he had needed some money. And so I ended up giving him some money to help him with the youth center. So we were building the youth center. Then months went by, and then his connection from years ago came to us and asked Rick that he want to help him get rid of, start this business back. Rick was like, Rick really didn't want to do it, and I didn't want to do it. I just came home. I just beat a case.
Yeah, you just came home on another case that we'll probably talk about. But was it true that Freeway Rick was sort of out of the game at that time? He wanted to kind of like retire.
No, he was out of the game. He was out. Both of us out of the game. But we actually was really doing a youth center on Crenshaw, an old building that he had before, when he got caught the first time.
You talking about that's on Adams actually?
Oh, Adams and Crenshaw.
Yeah, right that on building. Adams. It looked like an old theater.
Yeah, that building.
Okay.
So we actually was doing the. We was doing a studio in there. We was going to call it the Apollo West. And so that led on to me investing my money in it. And then we needed some more money. And so when the guy Blandone came, you know, it was all a setup. When the dude Blandone came, he was like, you know, he called Rick and said, you know, I need this. And Rick was like, you know, I'm out the business. I don't have no more money. And that led to me giving him the money. So that's how I got involved, because it was my money.
So at that time, Rick didn't have any money?
No, Rick came home. He didn't have no money. I actually helped him. I gave him some money. I loaned him some money.
So he was coming home from another case?
He just got out on that case that he had got caught up with this case, you know. And he had, I think he did like 7 years or something. So he came home on that. And then we doing the studio. And then Blandone called and led to all us going to prison.
And now, for those who don't know, you're talking about Danilo Blandone.
Yep, Oscar.
Oscar Danilo Blandone from Nicaragua?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess he was the connect that really put Rick on the map.
Yeah, he was the connect.
Yeah. So at that time, is it fair to say that Danilo, Oscar Danilo Blandone, was actually working with the federal government at the time in an order to entrap y'all?
Yeah, that's exactly. But we didn't know that, you know, the CIA and all that stuff was involved. We was just really trying to make some money. But Rick didn't want to do nothing with it. And I was just out of the game. And it was just like, he was like a father figure to Rick. And so he like convinced Rick, like he kept saying, you know, just this one time I owe somebody some money. Can you get it? Then the whole thing was like, you know, I have 100 in Nicaragua, but I can bring them to you. You know, I got 100 of them. And so he convinced. It took months, though. It took like 6 months or 8 months to convince me to go down there and do the deal.
To go down where?
We went to Mexico.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's where we got busted at the border. Yep.
So y'all was pretty much like some American me, huh?
Yeah.
That's American gangsters going out there and getting your own.
That's how it went. So, but he was Blandone all the time when he was calling us. He was in prison. He was in Metropolitan in San Diego. But they was so bad at Rick on this other case. So it was the whole thing, we'll let you out if you help us get Rick.
And what people don't know is they really wanted him because of the Iran-Contra investigation and all that, with Oliver North and
all that stuff.
And Maxine Waters going down there and helping him out.
Before all this even happened, like, we really didn't know that the Contras and stuff until it went down. Like, so it's like, say 6 months for me to really go down there. I went down there a couple of times, but I wasn't really feeling it. Like, and then the last time when I went, we did the deal.
So you met like some of Blondon's people, or
just one
of them?
He was an agent, okay, acting like he was the man. Wow.
So some Mexican looking dude,
yep,
that was working with the feds, and
he was
and
an agent, he was not agent. Working.
And he wasn't working.
Yeah.
He was
yeah. an agent. And at the time, you didn't know Blondon was in custody.
No, we didn't. They let him out for this reason, the buses. Mm.
Wow, that's so deep, man. So what type of sentence did they give you guys ultimately? I know they gave Rick
got life, and I got 8.5 years.
And did you get out early?
No, I didn't get out early. I did. I mean, I got out because I did the drug program.
Yeah. So at what point?
What's that, RDAP or something?
RDAP.
Yeah.
So at what point did you realize this was a whole setup? How long did it take to figure that out?
When it first went down, I didn't know. I thought it was Rick setting me up. I didn't, because I really didn't know, because how it went down. So we had a Denny's restaurant. We met them at a Denny's restaurant, and Blandone walked in, and the other guy, Special Agent Phillips, I know his name now, but they walked in and then, like, you know, asked me for the money. Like, you got the money? And I'm telling Rick, like, man, something is weird. Like, and I'm like, where to work at? You know, that's me talking about asking where to work. And they're like, no, we got it. And I called Rick to the side, like, man, something ain't right, man. It's like a setup, like, not a setup that there was a police, a setup like they was going to steal my money. Because I was buying 100 kilo. So I was like, man, I ain't giving them the money. So I didn't give them the money. And they're like, all right, just follow me to this mall. It's a mall around the corner. But it was all set up, you know, the cars in there, everybody in there was the feds. So when we went around the corner, so they asked for the money again. I said, Rick, go check the car, see the shit in, see if it's in there. So Rick rolled, he checked it, he gave me the okay, it was in there. We had a driver, we had another dude with us that was driving it. And so he jumped in the car. So when he jumped in the car, it was a kill switch already in the car, so it never started. But it was 100 kilos in there. So as soon as he went to the car, I saw the jackets, like DEA. They put the DEA jackets on. By this time, I'm taking off. We in two separate cars. Rick is in the opposite car, and I'm in my own car. So when I take off, they follow me. So I'm about to, you know, drive through the mall or some shit. Rick drive down the embankment of the freeway, hit a tree. So by this time, we, you know, it goes down right there.
So how much was they selling those 100 keys for? What kind of prices were you guys expecting to get?
It was like 10. So it was $1 million, like 10.
And that was a pretty good price because you guys were going to sell them for what, 30, 40,000 out of state?
Then I think out here it was probably like 15 or
yeah,
16.
Yeah, in LA, I think sometimes you could have got them for 14.
Well, he's talking in the 90s, mid-90s.
Yeah, 90s they were going for 14 probably in LA, so. Right? But
I
didn't like
it. No, because it was stupid for me because it didn't make no sense for me to do this. Because I really wasn't staying with $100,000 or something. So it was really stupid for me to do it.
I mean, but if this was not the feds and this was really getting 100 keys, I mean, you could have been making a lot of money out of state with the work.
No, but as I look back on it, shit, it was stupid. Yeah, it was stupid for me to even do it
because you
didn't need to.
You made a decision that you was out the game.
I was out. Yeah, I just came on.
Yeah. So you must have been just like stressed out when you first caught that case.
I mean, I knew I couldn't get a life sentence. I knew that was like I'm not gonna get a life sentence.
Oh, you knew that was off the table.
Yeah, because you know 100 kilos. I knew the guidelines already. I just left. So I knew what the guidelines was for the shit. I knew all that stuff already. So Rick, you know, he had two strikes already. That's the only reason he got life, because he had a career criminal. So he ended up getting 16 at the end of the day. First he got life, then that got cut down to 22. Then at the end, it was 16. Because he won an appeal, won all the appeals and everything. Like, even when they went to, I pled guilty, I didn't go to trial. Like, the day of trial, I stood up and said, I'm guilty of the charges.
Now, dealing with the feds, that's better to do it like that or opposed to just have the people face your accuser, should I say?
For me, I just did it. I just went to trial and won a case like a year, 2 years before that. So I was thinking I'm going to trial. But they had so much, like, you know, they had pictures, they had everything. They had me talking to the people. So it was like, gee, you know, if I go to trial, if I lose, I'm going to get 20. So I pled guilty, not knowing how much time I was going to
do. They have a rule, because I learned it, where if you kind of plead and just like go ahead and just take the deal or go ahead and plead out, that they don't give you as much time as they could or they normally would.
When did you realize that Danilo was working with the police?
Probably, like, we was in there for probably 3 weeks, and we got some paperwork from Gary Webb. Gary Webb sent us this paperwork. So me and Rick in the cell together. And then Gary Webb said, I got some of this information y'all probably want to read this stuff. So he sent us all the stuff. And this lady had gave, Cora Boca had gave him the information because her boyfriend was Carlos Letta. Carlos Letta, you know, Carlos Letta was Escobar person. And so she was telling us, like, they're not going to testify against y'all because this guy had been working for the CIA all this time, bringing money to finance the war in Nicaragua with Sandinistas. So we reading this shit like, damn. So me and Rick going through this every day. It's like stacks. They gave us stacks. But it was redacted. All the stuff was blacking out. So we didn't know the names. Like, damn, what were they talking about? You know. But it was like stuff like, yeah, just give it to the niggas. They'll sell anything. You know, that kind of stuff. Like, damn. So we then after that, then when Maxine got involved, and she ended up giving us the redacted one. She went and got it. It was a sealed indictments. She went and got all the stuff and gave it to us. Like, and then we reading the stuff. I'm like, damn, man, this is crazy. So all this time, this has been happening. The finance, this war in Nicaragua, it's, you know, like, so after, really, we got to thinking, like, man, we going to beat this shit. Like, we in there thinking that we was going to beat it. Then they separated. Like, it was me and Rick. They put him on the floor, put us on the floor, like that kind of shit. Then they put us in a hole. They put us in a hole because they said we was, we got all kind of stuff happening, man. Was getting raided in our cell because information they was taking it, and they said we made the story up. So
Gary Webb is the one that first kind of put you on game. What was going on behind the scenes? Because Gary Webb is a journalist that was writing for the San Jose Mercury News back in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, he got killed.
Well, they say it was a suicide, but a lot of people...
I talked to him a week before he got killed.
Is that right?
Talk to us
about Gary Webb, because he also put out that amazing book called Dark Alliance, I believe.
That's the book. It's about me and Ring.
But also, when he did the three-part story on the San Jose Mercury News, it was called Dark Alliance in that newspaper.
Yeah.
And that was like one of the first things that went viral on the internet.
I gave him all the pictures that's in the book. I gave it to him. That was my discovery, that the pictures of the money, the birds, everything in there.
But his career did get messed up from writing all of that. He couldn't get jobs at certain newspapers. The LA Times did him wrong. The New York Times, the Washington Post.
They wanted the story. So Gary was like, you know, Chico, I'm not going to eat. I talk to the man every day. Like, I'm not going to give up the story. You know, whatever happened.
But they didn't believe in the story originally because they could have wrote it if they wanted to.
They knew the story was true.
Yeah, they knew the story.
None of them published it. Jesse Katz at LA Times.
Jesse Katz could have wrote the story if he wanted to.
But he didn't. He wanted Gary to give him the story, and Gary pushed Gary out, and Gary wouldn't do that.
But a lot of these, I think a lot of them didn't believe the story.
I mean, shit, it was enough evidence. The judge even told us, like, right before the trial, like, even after the trial, even after they lost, like, when we got sentenced. And she said, you know, this could have went either way. But all the stuff that I'm telling you, they wouldn't let in court. Like, none of the CIA stuff was allowed in court. It was like, we made up this story.
So you don't think any of this stuff that Gary Webb was going through contributed to any sort of depression that he might have had?
Now, I was talking to the guy all the time. And he's like, you know, the lady who gave him the story, Cora Boca, it was alleged that he started, you know, have an affair with her, so his wife got caught up in that kind of stuff, and all kind of stuff was happening with the story. Like, and I was real tight with Gary. Like, you know, we developed a relationship because of the case.
So what do you think happened to him?
He got killed. He got shot twice in the head.
Now, Reggie and James, what do you think? The guy that wrote the book.
He says shot twice in the head. Twice in the head right there.
Is it possible to commit suicide with two gunshot wounds to the head?
I don't think so, but yeah. I mean, you can graze yourself, but if it's two bullet...
When I talked to the girl, he told me, it's like, he said people was on the back of his pole working, and he told me if he get killed, he ain't gonna kill himself. I talked to him, he told me that.
But why at that time? By that time, the story was already out in the San Jose Mercury.
They could have another Oliver North case.
The book was already out.
He was writing another story. Mm-hmm. I mean, Oliver North was in our paper. Oliver North was on our case.
But he was on the first one, not the second one.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. They didn't want another one. The government couldn't go through another one of those type of hearings.
Because what happened, like, when he was talking about the Kerry Commission, when they did that, it was really about the drug, but they never talked about the drug. They just talked about the guns and stuff.
Or the funding.
The funding, exactly. But when the planes was coming here, they was loaded with the cocaine. Yeah. And then they went back with the guns.
With the guns.
And so Kerry, you know, who was Secretary of State, asked the question, like, why aren't we talking about the kilo showers being over here? And it's all real.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
How do we level the playing field for all entrepreneurs? 55% of white businesses survive the startup phase, while only 4% of black businesses do the same. So I want every black entrepreneur to know about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have black ownership. This program gives black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field. From free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial, Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive offer at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
So John Kerry wanted to talk about it more? Yeah.
He didn't want to talk about the gun.
Yeah.
He didn't want to talk about the guns because he knew what they were bringing over here first.
And he's a former presidential candidate, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he, of course, he wanted to deal with that. You know, unfortunately, they got caught up into that Republican, Democrat.
So you think it was political for John Kerry? Like he didn't really care?
I think everything is political.
So. What I'm curious about is Maxine Waters was so vocal about this in 96, 97, and then one day she wasn't talking about it anymore.
I asked you that question.
She just shut her mouth up on the topic. Yeah. Like, did someone come knock on your door?
I think they had something on the husband, but.
Yeah. I asked her that question because, you know, when I came, because I had got out on bail for like, I don't know, a few months. And she actually helped me get out on bail, so I'm out on bail. I go to the thing that they had the head of the CIA, Deutsch, came to Watts. I was there with Maxine.
That was in Compton, right? Oh, no, Watts.
At Locke.
Y'all know who her husband was, right? You know, he's the ambassador.
Yeah, the ambassador, Sydney. Banker dude.
Sydney.
Yeah, from Bahamas.
Oh, so tell us about the incident at Locke, because that was a crowded room.
I was in there. I stood up and told them they was lying. I was like, you know, because they was telling the people, but they didn't know I was in there. Like, you can find it on the internet. Like, they was talking about, well, you know, there's no evidence. This is a made-up story. We're still investigating.
But that was Deutsch was saying that from the FBI?
Yeah. And then I stood up and said, you lying. Because you just, their dad gave me a paper, said the investigation was over. And that we was going to prison. I was like, stood up like, you know, I'm Chico, you know. But they didn't know I was in there.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, y'all up here lying to the people, talking about the investigation going on. I'm about to get sentenced in it because I had to go to court in like the next couple of days. But he was telling the people, like, yeah, you know.
So you were able to get out on bail?
I got out on like $1 million bail. Damn. Like in December. Like, I remember going to Dr. Dre's New Year's party. So I think I got out on probably the 29th or something, or 30th. Yeah, but I had stayed in there for like a year.
Okay.
And they finally gave me a bail.
I'll get you a bail.
So they gave me a bail after a year. So I bailed out. And then I went to, I was actually, I had an office in Maxine's office, sitting with her every day.
Wow. So you had some important people behind you the whole way.
I mean, after I came home.
I'm surprised you actually did any time on this case.
Shit, man. Well, if we would have won the case, but I knew we wasn't going to win because it was too much like when we was going to court, like every day, like, you know, they had, I mean, there was so many CIA operatives in there. It was like, you had to go like 3 or 4 metal detectors. And then they said Blandon wasn't going to show up. So when Blandon showed up, I stood up and pled guilty.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't win with him showing up. Because even though all the stuff happened, they did not let us talk about the CIA and none of that stuff. Just our case. We got busted with this, and that's what it was. So they never let, they didn't allow none of this to happen, like talk about what happened with the government, the CIA, and all that.
Yeah, that's one reason why I don't assist people on federal cases. Because you don't have that leeway, you don't have that flexibility to
express yourself on the views and opinions on a particular case. In the feds, they want you to write everything that you believe in, and then it gets presented to the U.S. attorney. Then the U.S. attorney will go to the judge and say, I don't want Alex saying this, I don't want Alex saying this, and I don't want him saying that.
And, that's talking about as a witness.
As an expert consultant, yeah. And the fed, this is what happens in the federal case. But in state, they're not that strict on a state trial.
Well, you know, my brother was actually fighting a federal case with a gun. Yeah. And they was trying to give Alton 54 years for...
they offered him 6 years.
Well, he wasn't taking it.
But he wasn't taking it, yeah.
Yeah,
you lose, they offer that. But if you go to trial and lose,
That's what he was facing.
Yeah. So they was bringing up all the things that he did in his past, and this is going to get you 50 years. So, I mean, this is why the conviction rate is so goddamn high.
Well, people take a deal for, you know, this 99% plea.
When you look back at your case, do you think that if I fought it, I might have won it, maybe? Or do you just already know that there was no winning that case?
No, because for my case, it was like, I would, like, they had me like this, then Rick, then, like, they
said. But what I mean by winning it, we know you did what they say you did, but there's all these other entities involved that will get exposed in the trial. Therefore, maybe Chico's not as guilty. The government has to take some culpability in this as well, and maybe we'll give you... a pass.
If they would allow us to talk about the stuff about the CIA, what happened
with Blandon. The judge struck most of that out.
Everything.
Yeah, he struck all
that. We couldn't
out.
Even say that Blandon was
pretty much to give him a defense, is what he said.
It wasn't no defense for us. We got caught with it, and they had everything on camera.
Okay, let's say you go to trial, though. Danilo Blandon has to come and testify against you.
He did that.
Once he said he showed up, that's what made him.
Okay, but your attorney can cross examine him.
Man.
They did that. They did all that. Rick went to trial, and
he was banking that the witness wasn't going to show up.
Okay,
we all was banking that thing because the lady Cora told us, and then Gary told us no way he's going to show up.
Because you have an entrapment case, basically.
Yeah, they almost, but
yeah,
they sold us 100 kilo. They had to work, not us. They had to work.
It's their cocaine.
Their cocaine.
But just think how many times they use that cocaine to get people like you. And the rest,
I mean, they got the pictures of the cocaine in the
two
boxes.
Two drug dealers making a transaction and get caught. It's the feds saying, we're drug dealers. Yeah, I got 100 keys. You want
to
buy them?
Yeah, but it's the feds selling cocaine to dudes who was already out the game and didn't even want to participate anymore.
But see, that don't even matter. You ain't out the game if you're coming with your money.
If I'm a juror on that case, I'm looking at I'm feeling Chico on this shit. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, man.
Because you're anti-law enforcement.
No, I'm not anti-law enforcement. I'm anti that it's unfair.
Well,
I believe entrapment is unfair.
He said that it's entrapment, man.
Yeah,
that was entrapment. You know, at the Radio City Hall, or, you know, his foundation, what he was about to, you know, I forget what he called it, his hall that he was about to make.
The
and then I walk
West.
In there and then say, hey, here it is. I'll give you a couple of days. Bring me some money to do that. Then maybe that's a little.
So if you're on Chico Brown's jury, you're saying guilty.
Oh yeah.
Oh wow. Even if the judge let some of this other stuff come in about the CIA,
that's different.
That's different. Yeah, yeah. But okay. They allow none of it to come in. Like we couldn't even talk about it. Yeah. They wouldn't even let but my lawyer got up and said, talked about it, like, no, this is a strike that we can't even mention about the CIA. You can't, none of this stuff.
So Rick tried this in trial.
He couldn't mention none of this. Our trial was just, we got caught with 100 kilos, and that's what it is.
So the jury never knew that the police is the ones that sold it to
you? Never. That after it was over. They don't know nothing about the CIA. Because this would happen to
us,
too.
They do now,
Yeah, they do now. But this even happened to us. Like, we were... So we're in there, like we was getting letters from, say, Trust Haskey. He wanted to do life story on us. So he wrote us a letter. They went and raided his office in New York. So that kind of stuff
was
happening.
Shut that shit down.
Shut it down. And said, we made this story up. Like, damn, this is a wrap.
So they didn't want another Oliver North situation.
Now, did you start feeling like people don't even want to talk to me now? People don't want to come visit me? People don't want to call me because... of what's happening to people that have contact with you?
But we was like, before he wrote the book, before the book came out, we knew this, but nobody else knew this. Like, Maxine them knew it, but the book don't come out until, like, I don't know. I think the book came out when I had got out on bail. The book came out then, because I remember going to the store to get the book. But he kept saying, wait till the book come out.
So Rick pretty much got out on appeals then.
Yeah, because okay. they
so it wasn't from help from Maxine then. On the second time.
No, because it was like they charged him with two cases that was really one case. So he ended up getting an extra strike. So the career criminals got him a life.
Got knocked down. Okay.
So he ended up winning both of the appeals. So he ended up getting 16 at the end of the day.
I just watched an interview on Vlad where Freeway say he was doing 100 keys a day. Is he exaggerating a little bit?
No.
100 a day? Whoa.
Nope. Okay. I mean, they had a direct connect with Danilo Blondon.
100 a day is a lot.
You know? Not then.
He said like, it. Who am I to question it? Well, I just thought 100 a day was.
If you got 100 a day, you got 40 cats out there that's on that level taking them out of town, 10, 15.
I just thought 100 a day.
Yeah, 100 a day is nothing.
I've never even seen a kilo of coke. I've never seen it. I've seen a quarter key. That's the most, 9 ounces. That's the most I've ever seen. So the thing about 100 keys.
A day.
What's the most you've ever seen?
I never seen a key.
Never seen a key either?
Wow. You ain't never seen a
key? I would have thought it was in the evidence room, there's not a key sitting in there.
No. And they didn't let me in there. I saw 63 keys, to be honest. Like I said, I know about the incident with what's that boy's name? KVD that I gave Fink credit for with the trailer.
Oh, that was 63 keys?
It was 63
keys.
So that's a lot of money, man.
Dark Alliance came out in 1998. That was 2 years after he wrote those articles in the San Jose Mercury News.
No, it came out before 98.
No, but 96 is when he put the story in the newspaper.
Oh, yeah, 96. You're right.
And then he took those three stories and made that into the book.
Man, because I went to get the newspaper when he, like, Chico, get the newspaper. I read it.
I actually have the original printouts off the internet, and they had the cover was somebody hitting the pipe with the CIA logo around it.
Yeah, you're right.
And the CIA said to the San Jose Mercury News, take our logo off of that article. That's a copyright infringement because they didn't like the way they had a crack pipe in the middle of the logo. But I was able to print it out with that original logo.
Yeah,
remember that?
Yeah, I haven't.
All right, Chico. So I'm the asshole on this panel. I gotta ask you, bro. How do you feel? And I know you're doing a lot with the community and the youngsters now.
And we're gonna talk about that too.
And we'll get into that. But when some people would say that you and Freeway was the cause of a lot of the black families being messed up in America.
I'm going to say we didn't know no better because it was at the early age of my life. Yeah, you know. Okay. So this is all new. Like, this shit was new to us. Like, even.
And we didn't know how it was going to affect people either. Have this long-lasting effect on our community as it has.
People lost their houses, homes, everything. Houses. It destroyed the black community.
Yeah.
But it was all pre-planned, man. That's some stuff.
It was already out there before y'all started doing it anyway, right?
Well, the 80s.
We were in the early 80s.
Well, the first case. Yeah. So he's talking about the second case.
Okay.
Well, there was never any purchase made on the second case, so there was no damage done to the community. 90s,
but, you know.
Huh?
They never bought the 100 keys.
You said about the second case.
Yeah.
You're talking about the history of selling drugs.
Yeah.
That's what I was just saying. You know, a lot of people will say, well, you know, Freeway and
Chico. Well, there's
a
market for drugs in America. Someone's going to sell those drugs to the people who want them.
But they were the ones that did it.
In the early 80s.
Or accused of doing it.
Yeah. They didn't bring drugs into.
Well, they didn't have ships. That's what I always say. We didn't have airplanes or ships. They didn't bring it over here.
Well, it was brought to a little bit of everybody because when it first came out, I remember in the hood in 80, I mean, it was popping for everybody. And
who you think was the source of it?
I don't know who it was. I didn't go to it. I didn't see it.
I used to be your neighbor all the time.
But when it came, you know, it was something different for us because now we buying cars.
Everybody buying cars. Everything
you know,
you
doing
wanted.
Different shit. But we was also selling it to people. Some of our good friends I know of are still on drugs right now today. Like Coondog, you know, from the neighborhood, he's still on it right now. You know what I'm saying? And that's from 1980.
But we know more people on Sherm than anything else, probably.
And back then in the 70s, but they got off that.
Sherm even right now.
Back, it doesn't reverse because it's so hard to get. But in the 80s and the 90s, rock cocaine was affecting the black community and the black family more than anything. If you don't know someone in your family that was addicted to that,
Well, I think it was in the white, them white people was on it.
They was on the powder. They wasn't on that rock and
like our people really was. It destroyed.
It destroyed
the community. It really destroyed. Really, like if we talk about Compton, it fucked Compton up.
Oh man, I know in Compton how bad it was. People walking. I mean, people houses getting burglarized. You was affected somewhere. You had your kids stealing from the mamas and daddies. I mean, I had two police reports where they were taking the TVs out of the house to take to the man. I used to do a stolen vehicle report every day, and it was definitely for not people on the level that they were accused of being on. I'm talking about just where the strawberries going to give up the car to the little 13, 14-year-old guy giving the car so they can ride around, and then as soon as they sober up, they go file a police report. It was just terrible.
You got to even look at, like, our parents was buying homes in Compton. Yeah. And there's a gap, like, in the 80s. Like, we were supposed to be buying all the homes. We were losing
the homes because...
Because the kids own crack. And the grandmother then sold the house.
Yeah, grandma.
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 And then it just devastated, not just Compton, Oakland, everywhere you go, every black community.
Earlier, what was those people over there by KDL and them house? They used to, that was like the crack house. Everybody just going.
That was, what you call them, Mama House?
Yeah.
She was old. She got raided 7 times.
Man.
But, I mean, it's just the choices that people make. And now, like today, like you're trying to make a difference. You're trying to get back from where you felt that you went wrong at. Mm. I mean, do you really think you owe
came home, like for real, when I first came home, I immediately started working at a place called Home.
Well, your heart seemed to have been there the first time.
Yeah. Robert Greenwald, who was the movie producer, actually, what you want to do? Like, man, I got to give back. My whole thing was giving back. And so I started working at a place called Home. And then I saw them kids wanting to be like, you know, me, sell drugs and shit. So I'm like talking to them, like, man, you're going to prison. Like, this is what's going to happen. At the end of the day, this is what's going to happen. No matter how much money you make, at the end of the day, like, even when me and Rick get caught, it's like, damn, this was pre-planned a year ago. They knew to sit on for a year. Yeah. Like, on my first case, it was like 6-year investigation. Like, this is, like, and then with Rick, they waited for him to get out. It was already pre-planned. Like, let's set this back up.
And when they
were
mad.
They was mad. They was mad.
Was that because he testified against a bunch of cops?
Exactly.
And they were pissed.
So I get caught up in Rick's. I get caught up when he testified against the police. And he'll tell you, like the other day, I saw him, we was talking about it. He was like, I really didn't have nothing to do with that situation. I really just came home.
And just because you was the money man. You wish you didn't have no money then.
Yeah.
I know you wish. I was broke then.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's how I get caught up in the situation.
I'm surprised people call him a snitch because he's exposing the police.
I never heard that about him.
What's that?
I never heard that about
him. Yeah. Have you heard that?
Yeah.
I mean, I think when you're exposing bureaucratic and official corruption.
What's that movie that Denzel played in? That's why he gets the pass. The guy that just died, Ray Lucas?
Yeah.
That's why he gets passed, because he was like, hey, I only took down police, crooked cops. I didn't take down none of my
people.
Oh, he's
on Frank Lucas?
Frank Lucas.
Okay. Talk a little bit more about A Place Called Home. Where was it located? How did you get that job, and what was it like there?
Place Called Home is on 27th and Central. And what happened, Gary, what's his name? Robert Greenwald had bought the rights to the book about me and Rick. And so he's coming, he visited me while I'm in prison. And he was like, so Chico, what you gonna do when you come home? I said, I gotta get back to the kids. And he actually was on the board at A Place Called Home. He said, go talk to Deborah. She's the founder of A Place Called Home. And if you wanna work there, you can work there. So day one when I came home, I started working at A Place Called Home. I started as...
And what year was that?
2001.
Okay. And Place Called Home been around a while, because I remember back in 95, 96,
yeah.
Suge did some, I think he donated a studio or something.
Yeah, the studio still, I just went up there the other day. Yeah. So, yeah, I came home in 2001.
And I met you shortly after you came home then. Yeah. My first office was 2001 on Adams.
And I came to your office in 2001, yeah.
Yeah, I had my little spot on Adams in Normandy, which is the area where I grew up at. I had my first little office. It was so tiny. It was 12 feet by 24 feet.
Yeah, upstairs.
And then I grew out of that office and got one on Wilshire. But, yeah, man, at that time you were at A Place Called Home. and
just like, you know, helping the kids, doing game prevention programs. And I started a sports program, an AAU team, because I would start the kids, you know. And then I wanted the kids to really participate in basketball. So end up starting them programs and educational program. So at first I thought I was just going to go up there and just, you know, get off of parole. So I really started liking the kids. So I started going to Compton to pick up the kids, like DeMar and all them. I was picking up the kids.
Most of y'all don't know that he was very instrumental in helping DeMar DeRozan, you know, get his career going on and stuff.
So I got a few kids right now that's in the league. Like when I started the traveling team, I ended up building it from one team to like eight teams. And I'm traveling all over with the kids, raising money. That was my niche. I knew how to raise the money because I had a lot of celebrities. And so I raised money to take these kids all over the country.
You also, have a good relationship with Master P.
Yeah,
you can tell us how that relationship developed.
We've been tight, even like our families from Louisiana. So we actually was friends before he made it big. We knew each other then. My father knew his father, that kind of stuff. So.
Now, you grew up in Compton. What part of Compton, what neighborhood, what area did you first, you know, get your start at?
And in Compton, Corner Pocket Crib.
So you know the Stones.
That's still my neighbors. Like, I've been knowing them all my life. We grew up on the same street.
What's that, Jerry Stone and what's the other one?
Michael
Stone.
Anthony and Punchy, all of them. Yeah. Like, we lived like four houses down, five houses down.
So what was it like growing up over there in Corner Pocket?
I mean, it was growing up then, you know, we talk about 64 when I was born. I mean, I got shot in 76, like when I was 12, gang violence, stuff like that. But
how old are you, Chico?
54,
okay. Yeah. You look good for your age.
Yeah, so, I mean, just like any other like, normal family growing up and, you know, the gang stuff started coming. I think Pocket had like 72. So I was not involved in it until like 77, 78, just claiming the neighborhood because I didn't get jumped in the gang. This is where I'm from.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to get jumped in no gang.
Yeah.
This is where, you know, we riding bikes and stuff like that we became that. Corner Pocket is like, just like every neighborhood how it started. Like, if you're from there, that's where you're going to be from.
You've been a Compton guy and a Freeway, been an L.A. guy. How did y'all meet?
Just having money type shit, like, you know, that kind of stuff and being in the gang. You know each other. You know each other. Like, oh, that's who from there. You know, it's, you know. And then,
I mean, but y'all wasn't just regular dudes on the streets.
No, it was just money thing.
Just
like,
made it,
yeah,
a little bit better in the game than others. Gotcha.
And you were right there. The Carver Park is close by.
Carver Park. You know, then Pocket and Carver Park was tight. I went to Centennial for my first year until my friend Norman got killed, like 1980. Like, got shot in the head with me right there. So that was like one of the biggest, well, not the biggest, but one of the first out of school, 1980. So he got shot in the head while we were going to Centennial. Because then that Centennial was Crips and Empire.
Yeah, I was about to say, you had no business being over there anyway.
But then it was like 50-50. When he got killed, they kicked all of us out and we ended up going to Compton. That's how we ended up, like, we had to go to Compton. They kicked everybody out that lived in the Pocket.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So got redistrict.
We got to redistrict this real quick, huh?
And James, you went to Centennial also, right?
Yeah, I went to Centennial. Yeah. I didn't go to class, but I went to Centennial.
Man, I remember like Putin used to come up there, which, like, you know, I was ditching in the ninth grade. I was going with the Walton, but I used to go up there. Putin used to come up there, like, man, why is this old dude coming up here, man?
Hanging
he was in the ninth grade, like he'd come up there because, you know,
hanging out selling single joints.
Yeah.
He talking about Putin, y'all.
Yeah. Picking up his little girlfriends.
That was then. That was in the 80s.
But let me ask you, do you regret any of that? The game banging days?
I mean, a lot of people died. Like, a lot of people, that, you know, it's terrible if you really think about it. Like, that's the stupidest shit ever. Like, if you think about it now, like, how you even get
I think about it now, and I do say, you know, if I know what I know now, I wouldn't have never been like that. I think gangbanging create monsters inside of all of us, you know. And then when you get older, you reflect on that shit and you be saying like, "Damn, I know I wouldn't get down like that."
You know, I remember a lot of times, like, even your brother used to be in the car with me, like, because of Manny and E-Rock, all in my family. So, but I used to go over there, like, yeah. They all knew me because I was, you know, I was hitting everybody over there. So it was like, you know, people gave me a pass because of that reason. Like, oh, that's Chico, you know. I remember just like.
Yeah, I mean, you bringing everybody, you got them all right, shit. Got them riding motorcycles and cars. Hey, better not say nothing to that guy.
So you was cool with a lot of Pyrus.
Yeah. Like, everybody in Fruit Town, like.
And blue, make green.
Yeah, it was all about that. Like,
that's when they purple.
Well, yeah, okay, whatever.
a lot of people out of staters, out of towners don't understand the idea that, oh, a Pyru and a Crip can function together.
And we rode the same bus to school with the Centennial. The bus picked us up on Stockwell. They come from that side, get on the bus, and we came from this side, got on the bus. We fight all the way to the thing back, and they pick us up, drop us back off. It's crazy shit. This is 80.
Yeah.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep expert. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Like, you know, it got a lot of, like you say, 80. People was getting shot in 82, but not like, you know, 85, 86, 87, but like 80.
Yeah, it started
the game, make them start being able to get the high power guns.
Yeah.
Well, the cocaine brought all that to
you. Yeah, 84, 85, 86.
So it was out of control then. It was out of control.
And then 87, 88, 89.
You didn't have to break in the neighbor house to get the gun. You go
send
your girlfriend there and buy it. Or however you got it. Yeah.
Now, I noticed over the years, you don't really talk a lot about the neighborhood you grew up in, and I was just wondering, you don't really go there too much.
Nah, I mean,
you know, everybody, especially people from Compton, are always saying what neighborhood they're from or where they grew up at.
He was mainly known as the man, not a gang member.
Yeah,
that's true. Like, you know,
he played both parts,
but
of that.
Yeah, known as
he
the man.
He didn't just have one title. He had the connect titles, so. Even carrying those titles, I mean, you know, some of the little kids might look at you right now and say, that's what's calling right there. That's the one that used to woo-woo. I mean, it's crazy because you can't, people won't let you live past that.
That's true, because, you know, if I put my name in there, they say calling the pie crib, like, on the internet.
Yeah, they don't let you live past that.
Even all the stuff that I do now, it's always like, you know, it's either the Coney Black Crip, it's either the Freeway Rickster, it's something. It ain't that I. And I have done films. I just, you know, I did the movie Vax, like, about the vaccination. I got some stuff that I've done. I got to deal with Netflix. I really do movies now, but it's still, you know, I think it's just now saying that I'm a producer, I'm a CEO of this company. Yeah. But so it took a while.
Well, let's talk about that Netflix deal. That was a Compton project. Let's take us to the beginning of that deal right there.
Well, this was something I was already doing. And matter of fact, Timmy Rue was with me when I first started this. Like, I was building houses in Compton, and him and Manny, when I first started doing this in Compton, what happened, we did a gang prevention program in Compton. We started off with like four dudes. This stuff then went big. I don't know, it's hundreds of dudes coming, a thousand. I said I did a celebrity baseball game for Crips and Pirates, right? I mean, every neighborhood was involved. And so we was promised jobs. You know, the dudes were like, yeah, I'll do this. We're going to make sure y'all get some jobs and shit. It never happened. So I decided, like, oh, man, this is terrible. Like, the dude's looking at me like, chick, man, you said this, you said that. And I'm like, so I start purchasing a house in Compton. So I bought a house, like, man, this is what I'm going to do. I'm gonna get the house. I know all y'all learned the skill, like, in jail. So I'm gonna take y'all and y'all gonna fix the house and I'm gonna pay y'all like that. So I was doing that. I was going to the mob. I was getting them. I was through town. And so I put five Crips and five Pirus together. So I started building houses in Compton, just refurbishing them. I was paying them out of my pocket. Like, I was giving them $100 a day. I think I had 12 dudes because I was paying them $1,200 a day. So this kept going on for years. So I was kept buying houses, kept redoing the houses. And then I'm telling Penny Marshall, like, she said, so what are you doing? Like, you giving back? Like, yeah, this is what I'm doing. She said, so I had videotapes on my phone and I was showing her, like, these dudes, these Crips and Pirates, they getting along. Look, they really getting along because they working. And so Penny was like, why don't you call Mark Wahlberg? She said, call Mark and show him this. I think this is something that you can do and we should really get behind you and help you. So Mark told me to come to his house. I went to his house and I showed it to him. He's like, Chico, what if you start building like youth centers in Compton and baseball field? But you know, if the buildings are available, we'll help you raise the money to buy the building. So I'm like, cool, like, all right. So I went to Compton, found the buildings, like Cynthia Nunn building. Yeah. That was one of the first ones I was gonna do.
She's
like,
leasing that, she's not buying it though.
Yeah, but I said it was cool because I just want to redo it. Like,
yeah.
So now at this point, it's like, okay, you got to get permission from the city. Like, okay, write a proposal. I did all that stuff. So I got Mark Wahlberg and them, like, give me the money. You know, Chico, go ahead and just do it and just keep doing it. Rebuild your city, and then we'll come bigger. So that's where at first I had it at HBO, and then we took it to somewhere else. The Netflix loved the idea. So Netflix, like, it's great. Let's do this. So I end up submitting my proposal, but we still working. We never stopped working, so the dudes was working.
Yeah. You filming?
Filming. I was filming like 6 or 7 months.
Yeah.
Because I got the dudes working. But I'm thinking, no reason that they would say no.
Yeah.
Because I'm giving the money. I got the dudes working. And the dudes, everybody happy because they getting, you know, I'm paying them $1,200 a week. So everybody just working and happy. And then what happened, when they denied this shit because of the, you know, the reason with the
vote, politics.
The politics got involved.
In the city.
Yeah. Okay, talk about how that vote had an impact on this program.
Let me be devil advocate to say their side of why they say.
Because I'm a little confused on why does the Compton City Council have any say so over a private show between private entities?
Because the buildings that I wanted to do was owned by the city.
By the city.
Okay.
They say private buildings.
And it was in redevelopment.
Yeah.
And that they were having to, why put all this money into a building when they have to give it back to the state? Is the people that against, but it was all politics. Yeah. It was this young lady on the board, Jaina Zarita, if I'm saying her name correct, and the young lady that he has a good relationship with is the mayor, which is Aja Brown. Anything that she was voting, and someone got her on tape saying it. Anything that Aja was for, or even if it was good for the city,
she was going to deny it.
She was going to deny it.
She denied it. That's what happened.
And that don't make no sense because this is his money he putting up.
Yeah.
Now, if you helping us, this man is helping gangbangers get off the street. Ain't nobody else doing this in Compton.
I got Don Warwick, Big Dave, Ducky. I mean, shit, I had everybody on the thing, like, you know, still today.
Well, they didn't need a job. They got Chris Brown in the headlock right now.
and you know what? That is so crazy. All your rivals, you working with them in a, you deal with them in a different way. And that's the coldest part about this, everybody don't see. You got Bloods and Crips in Compton fighting each other, killing each other every day. But now at the end of the day, you got a man hiring Bloods, which he could have kept that just, you know, to his side of the city.
It was worth, you know, sometimes you got to sacrifice stuff to happen. It was worth it, in my opinion, for that to go down, because that eventually hurt her. Yeah. She lost her job as of June the 30th.
So Jaina Zarita is not a city council member.
As of June the 30th. She lost her job.
Okay. So you shooting for this again?
Yeah, no, they want me to bring it back, but it's just, the controversy that went, like, part. Netflix never wanted the controversy. Yeah. It was just me going in there to do Gonzalez Park, to do Cynthia Building, to do the golf course. Like, the controversy, like, Chico, you know, what's this controversy? Why is they saying no? They couldn't believe that they were saying no when I raised the money to bring it to the city.
And what they would say, you know, I'm just trying to play both sides and tell it. They would say, well, we don't need to do anything. You didn't hurt nobody that's off on the golf course that's golfing. You hurt the homeless. So why you ain't going out to help the homeless and all of that? But it wasn't about that. It was just that anything positive. That's why our streets and all of that is still messed up in the city. It's because anything that's positive is going on.
Rosecrans is terrible.
Those three voters wanted this shit on.
They voted it down like it laughs. And I'm telling them, like, when they did that, I'm like, you know, we sidebar, like, y'all really did this? Y'all gonna do this for real? Yeah. And they were like, well, you know.
But it received like three no votes though. So it took more than just
three. It's five. There's only five.
She controlled all three of the votes.
So if there was a revote and after the council members change.
Well, like you said, they're going to have to go through the red tape and all the politics again.
But now they're going to say, yeah. They call me, like, they will say,
because it's something positive. I mean, this literally cost this woman her job.
There's no question it cost her job.
Yeah, this cost her job. And so I'm pretty sure she would rethink. Well, what really cost her a job is, because it happens all the time, but somebody was smart enough to catch it on tape, her pretty much saying it. And social media helped.
I was filming the show, right? It's five cameras in there. And I got posts all around the wall that we're filming the show. And the Mexican guy stood up and said, why are these cameras in there? That's on the tape, too. And they told him, the city manager said, he has a right and he has a permit. They said all this in there. And she still made the statement and said all that about the mayor. The eat shit and die. She would never vote for it. She said that on tape.
Yeah. I've seen that. I mean, everybody on social media saw that has any relationship.
I'm gonna show it to you. I have the whole trailer. Oh, like, okay. It's terrible to watch. Like,
so how difficult will it be to reconnect with Netflix after the no vote?
We still talking.
And what's it like working with Mark Wahlberg?
Mark is a real dude. Like, you know, I've traveled with him. Like, you know, go to Boston with his parents. Mark actually helped. He gave me, like, you know. I bought a building. He actually bought a building for me on Weston, like, years ago, like, probably 12 years ago. Like, I've been working with Mark since I came home. So he's actually the executive producer of this TV show. Me, him, and Penny was executive producer of this.
Those names alone, they should want to do it. Yeah. With just those two names alone.
So without Penny, does it create any challenges to keep the show going?
The only thing was that messed up the show was the council.
The city. Which is crazy to me.
Yeah. I mean, the show was going to help content. We was going to take this to New York, Chicago, Detroit.
We're going to do it all over.
Like, in urban cities. I was going to take the guys from their city and show that you got Crips and Pirates who was killing each other. I'll be getting calls from right now. Like, we would do the show, like, even like LA, Linwood, you know, they want me to come do their city.
See, that's just too positive for people. That's just too positive. It's
political.
I think they just didn't like Asia, right?
Correct. That's all it was.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
They just didn't
it's
like
unfortunate
her.
For the city and the community, you know. You need to investigate the part about what they are saying about the state-owned buildings, you know, in redevelopment. But that's their biggest, that's their only defense, that the buildings that they're about to invest the money in, we have to give back to the state. We don't, the city, meaning the city doesn't own them.
So the city of Compton doesn't even own these buildings?
That's what they say.
That's what they say, but they own the building. Like,
who, how, the when they gonna come take it?
It's a man named Willie. When they gonna come make a DMV there? He's been working at the golf course 60 years.
Wait, Willie who?
Willie
the guy that runs the
golf course.
Part three.
60 years.
Compton Part Three.
It's never been no work done on the golf course. So when I went over there and I asked him, he was so happy. Like, you know, oh, we're going to do this. And I'm like, you know, have a celebrity golf thing here and make sure your building, like, you know, you spend $1 million on this building. Like, buddy.
Well, that's going to make people come to Compton.
He was so hurt that it didn't get passed, man. Like, he actually quit.
He's a city employee, Parker Rec.
He quit. He's been there for 60 years.
Who's the front runner for city manager now that Rambo resigned?
Yeah, Rambo resigned. And like that, everything that happened for a reason. Like, it just threw a big curve in the whole Compton politics.
Yeah. Was it true that Satra and Rambo was in a relationship, or did that go by?
I don't even know. I have no.
Who does this no vote hurt the most, that this project got stalled? Like, who's really affected by this the most?
The people that own the buildings, or that was leasing, like, the buildings.
The Crips and the Pride Rules, me especially, too, because, you know, it's my production company.
A lot of people mad at you because they think you had something to do with the no vote?
No.
That you didn't do something, you didn't work hard enough to get this voted through?
No, like, every day, like the crew is, say, all together, there'd be like 30 or 40 of
them. How old is that? Did all this go down?
Actually filming, we started filming probably.
Well, I mean, when it got finally denied.
In December.
Oh, so it's not that old. Okay.
No, 6 months ago.
Okay.
December, but, you know, we still meet. You know, we end up building a studio, like a private studio, end up building some stuff, like found the building in Compton. Like, we meet over there now, but it's just like, the city don't have nothing to do with it. We still talk. Like, we still talk every day. What it did do, like,
got her out of office.
Got her out of office and got dudes that were never talking. Like,
her and then somebody else lose.
Yeah, the other dude trying to. Yeah.
So, sometimes it's not good to align yourself with people.
So if Omar was actually mayor, this wouldn't have happened either.
Well, Omar and her was together. He was actually helping her. She didn't want to associate herself with him too much.
Wait, Omar was helping Asia?
That's cousin.
That's her family.
That's her family. Not Asia. Jaina.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Omar was helping Jaina, and it kind of hurt him. He kind of tried to stay a distance because him and Leroy Guillory doesn't get along that well. And so, they call him Bishop or something like that.
Yeah.
But they don't get along. And so he kind of kept a distance. But, of course, Bishop is getting the blame now for, you know, because Omar said, see, if you would listen to me, you would have won. And so they going through all of that right now. But
I got a question.
Yeah.
Chico, do you or have you had any resistance from different sides? Like, how do you balance guys working together? You never had any issues?
We had a meeting in Compton probably 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Well, tell us the age of the people. So that's the big difference. You got to know the age of the
guys. Yeah, older dudes like me, 50. Yeah, but then we brought the younger dudes in by 3 weeks ago at the church. It was interesting.
Okay, what age is that? When you say younger,
from 18 to 18.
Really?
Yeah, 18.
They're usually the hard heads.
It kind of went down, but it was cool. It was like, it was in the newspaper the other day.
LA Times did a nice article on that.
We did it. It was real nice, though. It was like, I don't know, probably 70 or 80 of us.
Okay.
The meeting went good. We talked
about
stuff.
They had a picture of Don Juan was in there.
And Gangsta.
Gangsta. Okay, they had a picture of Gangsta and Don Juan. So
the meeting went good. It went good. But, you know, it got kind of heated up there.
Well, I mean, you know you're going to have some knuckleheads in the crowd.
Yeah.
You know you got those, I'm whoop to whoop this for 100 on both sides. My question is, just working with both sides.
No, man, that was like the most exciting and fascinating stuff because we really could, you know, I mean, there's people who shot somebody from my neighborhood, and we know this. Like, you shot him, they shot him. We talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
Were you out doing the 92 riot? I mean, the truce.
Yeah, and we talked about that, too.
Let's be careful of it, because that did not work out well.
Yeah, we was like, you know.
No, it worked out pretty good.
It didn't work out well.
Come on.
What it had it on?
93 had the lowest crime rate, gang homicide rate since 1984, the year following the 92 truce.
It had its own reasons for not working.
It may not have lasted as long as people wanted it to last, but some people will tell you that it still lasted to them. You know, it had a different impact on everyone in a different way. You know, but I think it did have an impact. Look at them homicide numbers from 93.
Sure, you have the right guys over the little youngsters that have enough influence over them to talk. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Because the youngsters is the one that the old heads like James, Chico.
Well, see, that was one of my questions. Like you deal with the older cats, which they already.
But each dude, like how we set it up, each dude is supposed to go back to his neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Like, say, somebody representing this neighborhood, now you got to go back to your neighborhood and talk to the youngsters. And that's how we was doing the whole program. Like, that was your thing for being a part of the gang prevention thing.
Okay.
You got to has to be somebody to go over there that can talk to the dude.
Yeah, but see, sometimes these youngsters ain't listening to the OGs.
Yeah.
And then you, see, these are the ones I truly believe we got to reach, because if you stop this kid, his mentality going to be different when he have a kid. And he ain't going to want to think like that. All the youngsters are the ones that's out there today, active. You don't got too many 50-year-old cats out there, like, really active.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
But they usually respect it, though.
No, but you're no good if you're not active. And little cats look at that. Oh, he ain't doing what we doing. We out here, whoop, 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 just keeping it 100. So my thing is, if you take the youngsters and put them in there just doing demolition
to a house. Yeah, that's exactly what I was doing. Like, yeah, I got some youngsters to do this too. That was like one part of the program. You got to teach this dude, man. You got to go back
that part
and
right
showing
there.
Him that, like, look, man, you part of this community too. We need you. So he can go back and tell the dude, man,
that's right.
Check, man, I'm tired. I don't want, like, I was doing houses way in the valley. Dude's coming home tired, man. Manny and them, like, I had them working. They so tired working. You know, they come
it was
home.
The first thing they ever had.
Yeah,
they
true.
Never had no job, yeah. So using and moving their bodies the way they was, I mean, they wasn't used to that. They was used to waking up in the hood, hitting the block, let's do what it do. So, I mean, it's something different for everybody.
Because I believe, like, for real, man, nobody was born to be a gang member. Like,
you, no.
You know, that shit, you know, you get attached to the lifestyle because you go outside, shoot dice, drink, whatever. And then, like you said, you have a kid, you got responsibilities, and that's the part that most youngsters don't understand, like, the responsibility part of it. And then once you get older, you get to thinking, like, damn, man, I wasted all this time doing this for
exactly.
real.
Exactly.
And then
give them a paycheck when they're young.
Yeah.
Is you rob somebody, you spend that money like that. But when you earn that money, I'm going to know. I ain't finna go buy them shoes. I ain't finna spend all my money on nothing. You know what I'm saying? Is they learn
you, you become more frugal with your money?
Yeah. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to. That's what they need to be taught, man.
And exactly what we're trying to do. The program would really help because, like, if we do, like, a lot of the sports program is done in kind of like the baseball stuff.
Yeah.
We all grew up, like, we knew each other. If you're from Fruittown, wherever, we all knew each other.
Cause we all played, go to Kelly Park.
Yeah, we played baseball. Victory
Gonzalez.
Park, Kelly Park, South Park. Yeah. And I played basketball at Lewis Park when I was a kid. Like, you know, the basketball program was there. So all that stuff got taken away, and then you want these kids, you ain't have nothing, ample time. It's going to get you some trouble.
I always say that. I said that on one of our previous shows, that instead of putting all this money into the law enforcement and all of that, we really need to start getting that money back into the park and recreations.
That's exactly that's what I'm trying to do now, rebuild and revitalize the whole sports and rec.
Yeah.
Like, you know, these kids got, even like, if it's boxing, whatever it is, you got to get these kids something to do. Because they don't have nothing to do. They're going to find something to do.
And there's a lot of them that got some squabble be in some gloves.
Yeah.
You'll get a whole bunch of them to come through there that's worthy of wearing some gloves. You got a lot of them out there, and they love to fight.
Yeah.
They love to fight. My whole thing, I've always dreamed that I had a building, and I had the older guys that was doing breaks, alternators and shit like
that.
Teaching the kids how to do that.
Do that, yeah. All the mechanics, they took all that out of school. Like, even the wood shop and all that, the metal shop, all that was taken out of school.
Man, I had that in Drew.
That program on Bullens Road still open?
I don't know. Yeah, it was.
The old Edison?
So it's stuff like that we got to keep the kids involved. If not, I mean, you know, a lot of people don't want to see it happen. Yeah. Like, let's keep the community.
But, yeah, James has always been big on teaching a trade.
Yeah.
Everybody's not going to go to college and go to school. Well, let's teach you guys a trade where you can still make money. Because you're making breaks, doing breaks and working on cars. That's going to always be a business for them.
Absolutely, because not everybody want to go to a university.
Yeah,
and you don't have to. If you learn it here, and you and where you learning it at, you can be certified from there. Then it's worth it. You know, going to somebody's garage and learning it, they're not going to certify you just because you learned it at Uncle's garage. So you have to have a building where, a program where you can be certified. Man, I'll be proud to get a, you know, something like that and say, I got something under my belt. I'm finna go get a job. I'm finna do this.
Yeah.
It's something we love to do. You know what I'm saying? If you run the streets all day, 24 hours a day, in a car and getting high and leaned out and just drinking, you ain't gonna want to do nothing. But if you wake up and go here, learn how to put on your tie. I watched this one black guy just giving out suits to the young brothers. And it made them feel good about themselves. You know what I'm saying? That's what Compton need. That's what, and if everybody working on their own city like that, then you can take it from your city to this city to that city, and don't have no problems. My city good. My backyard clean.
You know what I'm saying? I saw a deputy at Centennial High School, Darren Rayford.
Mm-hmm.
He did a thing where he had all type of black men come in to teach them how to tie a tie. And gave him a tie, donated him a tie, just to teach him how to tie a tie. You know?
Lil Vince's brother.
Yeah.
That goes a long way.
Yeah. That is.
Lil Vince is from Pyro. That's his brother, you're telling me. Yeah. Darren, who never gangbanged, by the way.
No, he went to Reverend Day with me for a couple of years. Reverend Day High School.
Because my whole concept on the Compton Riser that I was doing, like, because everybody, when you go to prison, you're going to get a job. So is it plumbing? If it's drywall, if that's it's painting.
Right. Yeah.
So I was like, all of us went to prison, but nobody went to hire. So what if we just started this construction company, which you learned how to do?
Yeah.
Man on a tile set.
That trade.
Yeah, that's how I started. Like, oh, you know how the tile set. So they was tile putting floors in. Like.
So they teach that in
the prison? Man. Yeah, all that is real. Like, okay. I was a plumber in prison. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they teach you got the whole everything because you run the prison.
Where's you getting 22 cents an hour?
But like you said, you learn a trade.
You learn a trade. So you take that trade from prison and bring it back out to the streets.
Yeah.
Like, but they not going to hire you. We have to hire you. Like, we got to make this happen.
Yeah.
And so that was the whole concept of the show. Like, these dudes went to prison, came home. Like, everybody was on the show. All of them went to prison.
And the good thing, it would have shown our other races that what we can do and make them not be scared to take a chance on hiring us.
Exactly. And then right now, like, for real, after all the stuff came out, then I'm going to show y'all, once we finish, I'm going to show y'all the show. You see the dudes working, we doing this, eating together, everything. Like, some way out. Like, and these dudes who was, you know, in the 80s was killing each other.
Yeah. Man. I hope you get that back going.
Yeah,
that sound like a good
I mean,
program.
I think we need to.
I'm really for stuff.
We
like
got
to
feature these brothers.
I swear to God to you, I applaud you for real. Because what you doing, a lot of cats out of Compton that have money or had should have been doing this a long time ago, and I like 100 applaud you.
Yeah.
Because you didn't only look out for your own people, you looked out for your black people, and you got the Bloods and Crips doing the thing.
And man, the cold thing, like, we was eating dinner or eating lunch every day, and we talk about all the, you know, we talk about this stuff. Like, man, we got
everybody just here.
Everybody want to go back and help, man, grab this dude. Because I remember we had, like, I don't know, about 4 or 5 years ago, because when I first started this, and I had a celebrity, I didn't even call it a celebrity game, but I had to have Penny, Mark, and all of them come. But it was Crips and Pyros playing each other at Compton College. And it was like 5,000 people. Every neighborhood was at this place, at the thing. And the police was like, gee, I don't know how you did it. I don't even know how this is even possible. And so I saw every neighborhood was there, man, and everybody shaking hands. You know, we got a picture with just so many Crips and Pyros on the field. And it was great. Like, nothing happened. Like, what happened the following weeks, and nobody got a job. And that's how the program went away. Like, I actually, like, you know, no, I can't get out like this. Because like, if I promise these dudes a job, I promise them this, and it don't happen. So I stepped away from the program. I was the president of the program.
I'm telling you, Netflix, if you, that would have got exposed on Netflix, that would have.
Oh, it's going to happen. It's still going to happen. It's just the fact, like, you know, like.
A lot of people take a chance with some people.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I'm still today, like, the little piece that you guys saw is just a little piece. Like, I'm going to show you the trailer, because it's like 22 minutes, but it's dudes, like, we actually building a building, tearing it down, and how the building look today.
Is the trailer posted anywhere online, or are you keeping everything off for now?
Okay. Yeah, it's like, but like, I showed it because, you know, I showed it.
Shopping around.
Yeah. No, I wasn't shopping around because.
Well, you had a deal with Netflix already, yeah.
The piece, what happened, the little piece that everybody saw, because I showed it to somebody and they released it. Oh, okay. So that's how that happened.
And it's still out there now?
That's the piece they showed, and that's how she ended up losing her job.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
That's the argument.
That and whatever taping we're talking, bragging about, she got 3 votes.
Yeah, that's all on the tape.
That's on the same one?
Okay. Yeah, it's on the tape. That's all featured in.
In that video. Gotcha.
All right, well, I think we're about out of time, but thanks, Chico, for coming down.
Appreciate you, man. Yeah,
keep us updated.
Very informative.
Please keep us updated on this Netflix project, man, because you got to do whatever it takes to get this thing done, man.
Yeah, no, it's in the ghost. It's going to happen. I mean, it's powerful.
Before we wrap.
And you ain't just got to do it in Compton. You just have to move on, therefore.
Yeah, but before we wrap, do you deal directly as being part of AG Entertainment, which is your company, AGG Entertainment, do you deal directly with Netflix, or do you have to go through a production company? How for other people who have ideas and want to produce and want to create, how does one get their project on Netflix lap?
This the first time I did, but I walked in there with Penny Marshall and Mark Wahlberg as my executive producers. So, you know, if you do the work, though, you know, they want content. It just got to be some good content, you know.
But you can't just walk into the doors of Netflix, like, you know.
No, you can't.
Did you hear the name?
Yeah, I know.
He walked in the door.
So a lot of people listening are saying, damn, I don't know a Mark Wahlberg. I don't know a Penny Marshall.
I got a full-fledged production company, like editing rooms and all that, like Cinema Libre. I'm the president, too, at Cinema Libre Studios.
So are you constantly looking for new content?
All the time.
All the time, okay.
All the time. I'm doing some films right now, and you can walk in with an idea, and we put it on paper. I have meetings, like, every Monday with a black group of writers that write these stories, and, you know. And we got a full-fledged, what I mean, that distributor films, too.
So how do people get in touch with you who are listening to this podcast right now that want to talk to you about their content?
You can email me at Chico Brown, ChicoBrown, 49@gmail.com. And then once we talk, then I'll give you my number.
You been hired? So Chico secretary Brown. Now.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time, but I want to thank everyone for listening to another edition of the Gangster Chronicles. Please, if you're listening to this episode on iTunes, rate and review us so that we can continue bringing this content. And I appreciate everybody that's been listening. And I'm out.
Peace. I'm out. This was a good one.
This has been a Digital Soapbox Network production.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears. Real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.